Welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. I'm Mark Peacock. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 17, recorded Friday, October 7th, 2005. Today's topics, AirWorld, our own little ecosystem, breaking through, how business travel gets you past the veneer of travel destination, and what daddy does on travel. I'll tell you, this week is an uncrazy travel week. I managed to dodge the trip to Toledo, so no mud hens ball cap for me this week. And so just ended up with just a couple of days in Austin, Texas. It was my first time in Austin, but I really didn't get a chance to explore. Rather than staying downtown and doing a live music crawl along 6th Street, I ended up staying further north in sort of this generic chain strip that surrounds I-35. I would have done the podcast from the bathroom of the courtyard there that in which I was staying, but that bathroom had one of these sort of noisy, hardwired exhaust fans. You sort of turn on the light, the fan comes on. And sort of it was a choice of either trying to get that that fan noise out with Adobe Audition or doing my podcast in the dark. Neither of those alternatives was too attractive, and actually ended up working way too late each night that I was there anyhow. So the upside, though, doing this from the suburban Chicago home studio is I've got my Radio Shack microphone back. Next week I'm heading westward, off to Phoenix and then to Denver. So I'm hoping to just pop in and out of Phoenix so I can spend a bit more time in Denver. My folks live up the hill in Evergreen, and I'm trying to work to carve out some time to see them while I'm there. And the flight from Chicago to Denver will be on America West, so I'm going to be testing yet another bankrupt airline, and also a bankrupt airline now being consolidated in a merger with U.S. Air. So I'll see exactly how happy those folks are. I had a good mail call this week. John Muirhead of the DesertCast dropped me a note describing his attempt at the new event to be introduced in the 2012 London Olympics, the Gatwick to Heathrow Dash. John and his family just got back from a 2 to 3 week vacation in Europe, and the get-home leg was British Airways from Pisa, Italy to London Gatwick with a road transfer to Heathrow and to catch the final flight home to LAX. I'll tell you, I'm a bit familiar with this two-step. About 4 years ago, my wife and I spent a week in Tuscany for our 10th anniversary, sort of returning to the scene of the crime, actually the scene of our honeymoon. And I had planned to fly into Pisa, which was the same as we had done 10 years prior. On our honeymoon, I saw the ugly itinerary similar to John's, Chicago to Heathrow to Gatwick to Pisa. So we skipped it, flew into Milan instead. John, however, gutted it out. And here's his story that he sent me. The first leg of our journey was a flight from Pisa to Gatwick, a ride across southern England on a bus to Heathrow and a flight to LAX. Pisa Airport was a shambles, and the BA flight ended up arriving 20 to 25 minutes late at Gatwick. The schedule called for a three-hour time window to make the trip to Heathrow, and we were told to take a National Express bus between the two airports. Hustling through immigration, collecting luggage, rushing to the National Express car to buy tickets to Heathrow, waiting for the bus journey itself, we arrived at Heathrow 5 minutes before the LAX flight was scheduled to leave. We missed it. BA did the right thing and put us up in a hotel with dozens of other U.S. West Coast-bound travelers who were on the Pisa and Venice flights into Gatwick. He said the part that really grinds was the terrible customer service. We were told that it was easy to make the trip from Gatwick to Heathrow in 2 hours, the implication being that we just sort of dawdled our way across the country, maybe taking in a movie or swinging by a Starbucks. When I told the customer service agent that the National Express quoted the bus journey at an hour 15, she said, well, that's wrong. The journey was at most 45 minutes. So, faced with this information, the customer service agent coded the problem down to traffic, although we had no traffic problems during the bus ride. An interesting piece of this story is that our daughter flew back from Pisa, Gatwick, Heathrow, LAX the week before. She'd faced the same timing problems and only made the LAX flight because it was 45 minutes late taking off. Well, obviously, we won't be flying BA anytime soon. You know, I'll tell you, with Fortress Heathrow, I don't think BA will get the same sort of attitude-adjusting bankruptcy wrench to turn service around at United, We discussed that in Travel Commons podcast number 15. But with new Atlantic new transatlantic upstarts like EOS and MaxJet, I'll tell you, the BA employees shouldn't be too complacent. John's two most recent desert podcasts, though, talk about his vacations. You ought to check it out. The URL's in the show notes. I also want to thank the folks who recently left some very complimentary comments on Podcast Alley. Still the best travel podcast on the internet, said one person, and another person, great show, good voice, delivery, interesting, useful information, and great stories. I'd subscribe even if it was fee-based. That, you know, I'll tell you, that's saying a lot, but don't have to worry because this one won't be fee-based, but thank you very much for those comments. It's stuff like that that sort of keeps me writing and keeps me pushing on this podcast. And finally, Janet, with no last name, left a comment on the Travel Commons website asking for the bridge song in the middle of Travel Commons podcast number 13. It was a cut from Shelby Lynn's most recent album. I put an iTunes link in my reply comment on the website. And actually, since it appears that a majority of the subscribers use iTunes, I was wondering, is there interest in having iTunes links to the bridge songs in the show notes? Just drop me a line or leave a comment and let me know. As always, thanks to everyone who sent notes at comments@travelcommons.com or left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com.
The same old story, it's as old as the stars above.
The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, Airworld. Greg Lindsay of Ad Age magazine just finished a 15-part series on what he calls Air World, what he describes as the invisible country that begins on the other side of the X-ray machines and extends in all directions beyond the airport concourses. Among other things, this closed systems of terminals and shuttling aircraft is its own vast media and retail ecosystem. Taken as a whole, it is one of the largest coherent standalone marketing venues on Earth. Hey, it's a great series. Greg gives a great behind-the-scenes view of the changing world of airport and airline marketing. And he ends up basically sort of circling the globe, visiting airports around the world: LAX, Denver, O'Hare, JFK, Orlando, Paris de Gaulle, London Heathrow, Singapore. I tried to connect with Greg. We tried to connect for a Skype interview. I told him, I said, I'm sure he's got some great stories that ended up lying on the editing room floor. But we just couldn't sync up our travel schedules across the time zones. But I'll keep trying with Greg. Anyhow, he writes about sort of the mechanics behind what I'll call sort of the genericization, if there is such a word, of the airport experience. And if, you know what I'm talking about, sort of the same restaurants, the same shops, even the same ads following you around the country. It's just sort of one more thing that drains the fun out of travel, removing the opportunity to experience something new. You know, this wasn't a big thing before September 2001. I mean, we just didn't seem to spend as much time in airports. And now, sort of the uncertainty around security lines, I mean, which can vary by a whole order of magnitude. Pick a number, 2 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, same airport, same time. The security lines sort of vary hugely without any rhyme or reason. And also the increasing number of flight delays has really significantly increased a person's dwell time in the airport. You know, how much time you're sort of wandering around the concourses. And, you know, I'll tell you, the cost cutting, and we've talked about it before, the cost cutting by the airlines, the decontenting of the cabins, as we talked about in Travel Commons podcast number 15, has significantly increased the importance of sort of the airline dining experience, if I can use that oxymoron. My experience grabbing lunch this week at an Austin airport was a pretty typical example. There's a whole string of food stalls: Mexican, Texas barbecue, deli sandwiches, an ice cream stand. You know, I'm in the middle of Texas, so I chose the Salt Lick barbecue stand. The bottles of barbecue sauce that were on sale in the line on the way into the cash register claimed it was the last bit of Texas in Austin. So, hey, I ordered the chopped barbecue sandwich, you know, beef, of course, because I'm in Texas, as opposed to pork in Memphis or North Carolina. Ordered the sandwich and looked at my receipt. It said, Delaware North Companies, providing care and comfort for people away from home. I'm in the heart of Texas, and it's Delaware, not even Southern Delaware, North Delaware North companies providing my meal today. You know, nice sentiment, providing care and comfort, but it prompted me to sort of look closer past the cash register. All the food stalls were connected. Same kitchen, same employees, same company. What I thought was the last bit of Texas was really sort of just another brand being used by another one of the catering conglomerates that sort of owned this airport dining experience. You know, not surprisingly, the bread was stale and the meat needed salt. Yeah, now, I'm not getting down on this completely. It's not all bad. I mean, you know, hey, it was tough to get a decent cup of coffee in most airports before Starbucks sort of mestitized across Airworld. And, you know, not all the independent places are great. There's a coffee shop lunch grill on the second floor of White Plains Airport. And I'll tell you, that place has always been a hole. But on the whole, I don't think that the supremacy of sort of host Marriott, apparently they've got, they own the concessions in 71 airports. I don't think that sort of, that sort of concentration is doing great things for my taste buds. Nor is the dominance of advertising companies like Clear Channel. Now that they've started pasting ads on the sides of jetways, I'll tell you, it's impossible to get away from those huge SAP ads. You know, Joe's Crab Shack and biotech company uses SAP. Or the Tiger Woods Accenture montages. No matter where I am, I see Tiger taking that same approach shot. Though, you know, sort of come to think about it, there is one little bit of uniqueness left in Airworld. The smoking rooms in the airports down south, Atlanta, Charlotte, they've all got nicotine rooms in which you can share, you know, sort of some quality time with fellow members of the Black Lunger Society. It's absolutely a uniquely southern thing, certainly nothing you'd see in LAX. So the next time you're in Charlotte, stop by, light up, and soak up a little bit of that local flavor.
What I feel is like an old freight train.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, using business travel to break through. You know, so, you know, if you want some local flavor, like we just discussed, you got to leave the airport. You got to sort of abandon the cocoon of Airworld. But how to punch through that tourist veneer, the state tourism organization, nice painted signs, and get down to the real local flavor. In my experience, I think that business travel really gives you the best entree. The week before last, I was in Detroit, swung past the GM Tech Center, General Motors' big facility up in Warren, Michigan, to grab lunch with a friend. And I'll tell you, Warren is not a place most people go when they visit Detroit. You know, heck, it's not even a place a lot of people go when they live in Detroit. However, driving down Van Dyke Avenue between the Chrysler plant up in Sterling Heights and the GM Tech Center, you're sort of right in the middle of the Detroit auto culture. Here's a slice of an audio comment of mine that Adam Curry played on last Tuesday's Daily Source Code.
And the neat thing about driving around in those areas of Detroit is that you see all the brand new cars, either they've just been released or they haven't even been released. They're sort of pre-production cars. So I must have seen at least three or four of the new Pontiac Solstices guys running around in that two-seat Roadster with the top down, because it was a nice day Friday in Detroit. And that's a sharp looking car. Saw a bunch of the new Chevy HHRs, which is sort of it looks a little bit like a PT Cruiser, but it's really the design cues are a takeoff of the 1940 Suburban, but a lot smaller. And that's a neat looking car. And saw a brand new Mercury, kind of their mid-size one. Hadn't seen one of those out around. And then you always see a couple of the cars that are actually truly pre-production, still haven't been announced. So they've got the big black bras on the front and the back. So they're driving them around, but you can't tell what they look like because the front and back are hidden. So that's always been a neat thing about living in the Detroit area.
You know, the best auto show I ever attended was in Detroit with an auto client. You know, it wasn't so much for the concept cars or the demo girls that I enjoyed it, but which are interesting. But what made it really enjoyable for me, above and beyond, say, you know, the Chicago Auto Show or the New York Auto Show, was watching the other attendees. You know, sort of three guys crowding around the cutaway of a continuously variable transmission, or another guy examining the rubber weather stripping on the passenger side A-pillar of a Nissan 350Z, were sort of two guys repeatedly opening, closing the front door of a Chrysler 300 and sort of in the end sort of just walking away none too satisfied. I'll tell you, forget the Motown Museum. This is what Detroit is about, the cars. But the only way to see it, to really see it, is to sort of hang with the guys in the industry. And I'll tell you, given the poor records of the Tigers this last season and the Detroit Lions aren't doing too well this season, 5 minutes into any conversation and you're deep into car talk. No politics, no sports. You're into vehicle platforms and launch plans and competitive positioning and content mix. You know, when you look at the state of Michigan tourism brochures, they're all about, at this time of the year, they're all about gold leaves and spending time wandering around lighthouses on the Great Lakes. Forget that. Punch through. When you're sitting down with people, you're sitting down around business travel, you end up punching through and getting down to sort of the grease and the gasoline. And the thousands of parts that make up cars, and that is that's a neat thing about travel, is being able to really sort of get down and dirty. Eventually, you got to wash your hands, but that time gives you the real sense, I think, of what a place is about.
Walking in your footsteps. Walking in your footsteps.
Today's last topic on the Travel Commons podcast, what does Daddy do on travel? Now, since I was home today and light on material, I decided to enlist the kids. First, Claire, who's in third grade. What do I do while I'm out of town on travel?
Work. And go to the pub and drink beer. You write little letters to all those people. And then you listen to your iTunes.
Well, that doesn't sound like a bad job, really. I guess I shouldn't complain so much. Now I asked Andrew, who's in 7th grade, the same question. What do I do when I'm out of town?
You record podcasts and you go to meetings. And you eat. And you drive nice cars. If you can get your hands on them. Like, you got to drive the Ford Mustang one time.
You know, he's right, I did get a nice Mustang in Phoenix once. And he remembered that. I forgot to tell him, though, about the broken down Taurus I had this week in Austin. I also asked Andrew, what else should I do on travel?
Well, you get reimbursed on the money you spend, right? So basically, you're traveling for free. So you can go get a really nice car since you're getting reimbursed and drive it and go sightseeing.
Well, that sounds a lot better than recording podcasts in bathrooms. And what's the best thing about business travel?
You bring your swimsuit and swim in pools. Then you can, like, rate your pools 1 to 10. And then the top 10 places with the best pools, we can just go there. We go there and we try out the pools. We stay there for like a day. Just go around the town and tour the pools.
And finally from Claire, what's the biggest mistake that I make?
Hey, you don't play enough.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 17. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, especially the new subscribers. And I hope you decide to stay subscribed. And thanks to all the folks who have been linking to the Travel Commons website. I saw some new folks pop up on my web logs. I'm going to really butcher this name, I know, so I'm apologizing in advance. But Udayans weblog on technology. I don't know what he's doing, but thanks for the link. And honest to God, when I get a little bit of chance, I truly will build sort of a cross-linking column on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website. But I really do appreciate all the folks who are cross-linking. Thanks very much. Thanks to the longtime subscribers. I don't think I've thanked you guys for a while, but thank you for staying with me and sending really some great emails to comments@travelcommons.com. Posting some interesting thoughts on the Travel Commons website, or putting up some nice words up on podcastalley.com. As always, I really appreciate the feedback. And as I said earlier in the program, it's a big piece of what keeps me doing this. So anyhow, everybody take care, have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye now.